This is Jim Semivan, and you are listening to That UFO Podcast.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. My name is Andy, and I am joined on this breakdown of a lot of news by Dan. Dan, welcome.
For some reason, I was going to say, my name is Andy. It's just how we start.
Yeah, do you know, I notice sometimes I don't say that, and I don't, it's rare, but I should do like a prize, you know, for people when I don't say it on episodes, if they email in.
Yeah.
Don't do that, I'm not giving out prizes.
But yeah, well, what about like a McGrillin no prize? Stanley used to do a thing when fans noticed something that was notable, but he didn't want to give out prizes. It was just like, I'll give you a Stanley no prize, so I don't have to do anything, but it's a nod.
And can I be even lazier and just people can just assume they've got the no prize straight away? So yeah, well done if you've got that. I think it tends to be if I'm more like nervy doing a show or if I'm rushed. But yeah, anyway, listen, news, Dan, there's a lot of it. And do you know what? It was kind of a busy weekend and week for me. So I've done a lot of catching up over the last few days or before Friday with a lot of stuff that's gone on over the last, 2 weeks since we properly last recorded. We're going to get through lots of kind of bits of stuff here, which I think is a good thing in terms of UFO news, because again, it's that whole thing of, for anyone who thinks nothing's happening, there's a lot happening, but it seems really fragmented and all over the kind of shop. That could be a good thing for you, could be a bad thing, you could be indifferent with that. But yeah, Dan, can we start off with the UAP rally in North Carolina? Rally is in North Carolina. Rally as a word and so as a place. Jesus, love of God. Okay, so the UAP rally in New York City, not in North Carolina.
And this wasn't where a bunch of people drove low-cost UAPs and crashed into each other and, you know, through country lanes. This was a protest of sorts, right?
Protest slash celebration slash thank you for Senator Chuck Schumer. Yeah, it was organized by the Citizens for Disclosure Now. That's an NYC-based partner of the New Paradigm Institute. Some folks will know that's founded by UAP transparency activist and lawyer Danny Sheehan. The object of the event, Dan, from what I could see, was to engage your everyday American on the UAP UFO topic and hopefully gain some volunteers along the way for some things they want to do as well, looking to start local chapters across some 45 states, potentially. Nice intro article from the debrief on that one. I think Chrissy Newton wrote that one, so thanks, Chrissy, for the insight. And it was advertised on Twitter, some folks may have seen, the few days before, and got a little bit of traction, basically as a way to gather outside Senator Chuck Schumer, his office in New York City, as a thank you, given Senator Schumer, along with Senator Rounds, tried to push through the UAP Disclosure Act, which never quite made it through. They tried to throw a lot of shit at the wall and not much of it stuck, as we like to say in the UK, and the old NDAA. But that's not dead and buried. That's still going to come back, I believe, Dan, and we can discuss that. But yeah, what were your thoughts when you saw rally in NYC for UAP disclosure?
I thought it was really interesting. I put out a poll not too long ago saying to people, you know, if there was a protest, would you go? Do you think we're even ready for that kind of stage of this conversation yet? You know, share your thoughts. And a lot of people thought we weren't ready, but you've got to get started somewhere, right? And looking at this, you know, it looked like they had about 15, 20 people show up, which, you know, is pretty respectable for 12 till 2 on a work day, on a Thursday, you know, in New York City. You know, there's nothing to sniff at. And it sets a bar for those other states that want to volunteer, you know, the people out there that kind of want to gather like-minded people to make a point that we're not going to go quietly on this stuff. That's how I saw it. You know, a lot of the video I saw from the event itself, you had evidently people that hadn't met before kind of meeting for the first time. And this is something that I already said I loved about the inquiry into the phenomenon. I might have messed up the name. Inquiry into the unknown, maybe? The conferences that happen in New York, which are really
with Jay
really
and James.
That's right, with Jay
Inquire
and James.
Anomalous.
Inquire Anomalous, that's why I couldn't remember it. But yeah, you know, they're really great hubs for meeting people. And once you kind of put a face to a name that, you know, someone that you usually talk to online, then things kind of start happening. You know, you get people helping each other out and kind of saying, well, I can program AI, I can do this, you can do posters, you can do that. And people come together as a group. So I really see this as kind of the coming together of a lot of people that have shown initiative, that have shown that they really want to be on the ground floor of this thing and help move it along. The only criticism I've seen of it is that I know with the new Paradigm Institute, they're offering a course to study UAP history and wisdom, nice vague kind of term, for about $15,000. And a number of people have said that this kind of felt like an advertising event. It's an advertising event as much as you want it. I haven't seen anywhere where the course was actually advertised during this. You know, the founder of the university that's offering the course was there. He was present. He didn't talk about it. So yeah, I'd say a good start. You know, it's not people pulling down the doors of these locations we've been told exist, but we got to start somewhere. How about you? What did you think?
So, I love the idea. Well done to everyone who showed up. You said it's not 15 to 20 people that time of day is not something to be sniffed at, as we again say in the UK, but we sometimes, and I'm going to just present this argument here, and this isn't to downplay it in any way, but when you look at the optics of a situation, we thought the Anjali press conference looked really bad. You know, the way it was presented, sitting out there, very small numbers of folks, and that looks a certain way to the general public. This event, if you are trying to get anyone interested in your cause, your product, whatever it might be, whether something's being bought, whether it's free, whether it's just to get eyeballs or ears on something, then the more people involved, the better. If you see 15 to 20 people holding placards out in front of a building, it might get your attention for a brief second, but I don't think that does hold attention. And I wonder if that does that potentially not, is fueling the stigma of the UFO topic the wrong way to word that? But do you get what I mean? If you walk by
100%
a building and there are 15 to 20 people outside with placards talking about UFOs, and just let me add to this, okay, by adding a quote, and I'm certainly not coming down on any side of the fence here. If I was in the area, I would have went along to this, okay? So it was from Dr. Jim Garrison, who is a director at the UFO Advocacy Group for the New Paradigm Institute, and he said, it's an extraordinary moment. Humanity is entering its ET moment. The extraterrestrial phenomenon is real. And that was a quote he told the New York Post. That is what's so important about Schumer's leadership. So again, and I've got the note here, Dan, okay, is that language useful at this point? You're going to have folks, I know, come down and go, oh, we have to get past the stigma, Andy. Okay, that's, I'm there, that's fine. But for the 99.9% of the general public who are walking past this that you want to draw in, you're shouting about ET and there's 15 people with placards and boards. I don't know if the optics of that situation work well, as opposed to, like you say, a gathering of the Inquiry Anomalous or Sol Foundation that gets eyes on these things. Because this was not a free event, you know, it was outside, it was anyone could go along, but I just don't know about the optics of the situation and if that necessarily helps, or could it have been thought through better? That might just be me, totally fine with that, but
no, I'm with you on that. You know, when these events take place, we have to be aware of what they're for, what's the aim, right? And this one, I presented it during the show. I said that it was a disclosure protest, which it technically wasn't, right? You were correct in on the poster. It says disclosure rally. Let's thank Chuck Schumer. So it's kind of a little bit wishy-washy as to what the actual goal is here.
Yeah, what even is it? Yeah.
And you had a number of people come along without a goal in mind, so they don't know if they should just rock up and get their placards out and, you know, come up with a catchy phrase to start chanting with the group. Instead, it's a bunch of people kind of coming to meet. I've focused on the positives of that, but the negatives are that it's a group of people stood around holding a bunch of photos with kind of, you know, it says like hope and hero and things like that. And I'm great. You know, I'm on your side. Like you said, I'm there if I'm near that event. But should the signs not tell passersby what's going on? Should they not inform people what's going on? You know, like if the average American is walking down the street past this event, do you just want them to think that there's a bunch of people hanging out? They might be doing, I don't know, like a surprise kind of dance thing, or you know, just anything. They could be a trading card group or whatnot. Like you really want banners and message in there so that people kind of go, oh, what are we talking about? Oh, governmental oversight. Wow. Yeah. No, I'm in for that. And like you said, we haven't even mentioned extraterrestrial at this point, but government oversight, spending taxpayer dollars on things they don't know about, compartmentalization. You know, there's so much here that doesn't involve that language that it's worth thinking about the optics of that to someone who has never been involved in the subject before. And I just also want to touch on that word that they use in there, extraterrestrial. It felt kind of like, you know, the report came out, the report hounds on extraterrestrial. As I said in the last show, I got in touch with Susan Goff, and I said, hey, you know, you keep saying extraterrestrial in this report. What do you mean by that? And she says, it's anything not of this world. Very specifically, not from Earth. That's what we're talking about. And rightfully so. People said, well, why isn't Arrow talking about all these other possibilities that, you know, Carnell presented as possible? ET was just two of like 50 things that he presented. So why are we focusing on those two things? Equally, why are they focusing on extraterrestrial at this rally? You know, like there's a bigger kind of issue at stake here. And I find that like a really narrow messaging. It's almost the same issue as the Hollywood Disclosure Alliance. So many people with so many different sets of beliefs about what the goal is and what's there that you almost have no unified message at all. And so when someone rocks up and says, what's this about? And they have a guy, you know, there was a clip on the New York Post showing an interview there where one gentleman was talking about being followed by UFOs, by triangular UFOs in the sky and things like that. Cool, I'm down for that conversation. But Joe Smith walking down the street is just going to leave at that point. So I feel like there could be a bit more self-awareness here, you know?
Yeah, that's probably true across the topic, and no one's perfect. And I'm far from that, okay? And I'm trying to present this point in at least a concise way. And it's the same as when I see a major celebrity tweets about UFOs or an organization or politician who is never usually associated, but they are going to get tons of engagement or tons of likes, reposts. And I see lots of folks from the UFO community on Twitter all post the same thing. So I'll go on usually to try and see what, if let's say, for example, Kanye West posts UFOs are real, okay? I'll jump on and I'll hope to see what are people saying to this that are normally aren't UFO folks. But what I see are the same folks from UFO Twitter all posting their same videos or attacks that they post on every one of these things. And I'm like, if I'm a member of the public looking at this, I'm probably switching off before I'm past the fourth or fifth one, because I don't want to see your stuff advertised. I don't want to see your shouting, you know, conspiracy looking tweets and stuff. Try and be rational, try and be sensible. It's a chance to engage folks in the topic in a different way who might normally be involved. But it's that whole madness thing, isn't it, of doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. I'll be honestly, Dan, as well, I'll be really fair with the Hollywood Disclosure Alliance stuff. As an organization, I spoke to Serena, I spoke to Dan. It's not impressed me in any way, shape or form, as much as they've both been pleasant to speak to. I think with the Hollywood Disclosure Alliance, if you spoke to 20 members, they would give you 20 different things about the organization that they think it's for. And I don't think that's a good thing. And people are going to have their own ways they want to use it. And I'm going to, Dan, bring something forward we're going to talk about in a second, the body stuff, because I think it's relevant here, I think.
Yes, it
but
is.
I think if you asked 20 folks from the Sol Foundation's first conference, and I've got no affiliation with them, so I'm not bumming them up for no reason, but I reckon they would all
tell
you.
British phrasing again.
Yeah, yeah. I wouldn't be. I don't know what the US one would be for that. That's just like when I said batting 100 and people corrected me that it's batting 1,000. And I was like, oh, okay, sorry.
Not in British baseball.
No, not in Britball.
You guys have soccer. You keep it. You can bat 1,000 there.
What was I going to say with the smashing out the park or something? Yeah, I think the Sol Foundation, people would have a common ideal of this is what we're about. This is what we're all here to do. We're all from different backgrounds. all from different disciplines. We're coming at this from very different places. You know, a Jacques Vallée is different to a Beatrice Villarreal, who is different to a Gary Nolan, who is different to a Whitley Strieber, who was there but didn't speak. You know, those folks were still there in attendance, or people who we don't even know were there yet. But I think they would come away and say, this is what the group's all about, and this is what they're trying to achieve. I don't see that with various organisations. And I worry that a lot of the same people seem to be attached to those same organisations. It's the same folks who would turn up at an award ceremony and give themselves a lifetime achievement award because their mate runs that thing. So not to go into it, I'm not going to start slinging mud. That's, everyone's got their own kind of likes and dislikes.
I'm with you. And like we said, we'd both be there at that rally if we were within, you know, the vicinity. And don't take this as just bad mouthing it. We'd love to help and, you know, in whatever way we can.
I wish more
and
people had been
the
there.
Guys yeah. that... The guys that put this together, they did so in like a week and a half. And the New Paradigm Institute kind of, when it was announced, the weekend happened. So there was no kind of pushing out of media stuff, you know, before that weekend, which meant they only had like 3 days to promote it. And, you know, I think they did a stand-up job for the time they had. But, you know, going forward, I think there should be a focus on messaging, a focus on, you know, go to the area. Go to the nearest subway station, and just hand out flyers for an hour each day. Like, get people that aren't in this community to come along and see what it's about. Talk to them about, you know, I just want to touch on Lester Nair. You interviewed him a while back, and he's so good at what he does. His UAP.
I think it's Lester Nari, actually.
Nari, I apologize.
I pronounce it wrong as well.
I apologize. But yeah, he kind of refocused the issue because I guess he feels the same as us, that everyone, you know, a bit spread thin and kind of shits at the wall and stuff like that. But he kind of broke it down into five areas, which I thought were really concise and really well thought out. Illegal withholding of classified information, whistleblower retaliation, misappropriation of funds, targeted disinformation campaigns. At this point, we've not even mentioned extraterrestrial or NHI. Mm-hmm. And then the last one is possession of non-human crafts and biologics. You know, there are, pick one of those five things and talk to people about them.
But it's that fifth one that's going to get people's imaginations. So there might be stuff there that gets people's attention, but that's the one that captures folk. And like you say, I think I wish more people were there. I think what this sort of event would really be good for is if we knew there were going to be another UAP hearing in Congress, that you could organise something like this for the morning of, for the evening of, the day before, whatever it might be, to say outside Congress or outside this building, we're going to gather because you know folks are going to turn up for that. Same with the hearing that, you know, we had the audience for behind Grush, Fravor, yeah, and right. Graves. People were there for that. People queued up for that. People didn't get in the building. You've got a ready-made crowd of several hundred people at least who are going to be there. And organise some meetups around it, organise an, you know, Inquire Anomalous around it, stuff like that, you know, no pressure on Jay and James, but that kind of stuff, or someone else go and do it in bloody DC or whatever it might be. That for me would help if you could organise around an event, because that's just a hell of a lot of logistics. But well done to them, well done to everyone who went. I think there's a time for it. For me, just a personal thing, keep the language, the ET stuff out the press for this, and try and do, oh, this is going to sound really big-headed, but when I try and speak to people at work, I've mentioned before, I'm not talking about aliens, forget about aliens for a minute. Let's just talk about what if it's something else? What if it's not human? Forgetting aliens and just try and...
This is, I don't think that's big-headed. I think this is your skills as an interviewer coming through. You ask questions instead of telling people things. And when people can tell you what they think about something, they're walking down a path on their own. And that's always better and a richer experience and a more accurate experience for someone than being just told, we're not alone and they come from Alpha Centauri, you know? Like, let people kind of lead the conversation and just educate them as they go along. That's what the opportunity is for, I think.
Do you know, Dan, I'll take the compliment. I don't take them well. But I used to work in a call center on the phones selling like satellite TV subscriptions, right? Sky, for those in the UK, that people bloody know.
Andy saw pieces of sky.
Yeah, pieces of the sky. And when Game of Thrones was really big, really popular, I don't like Game of Thrones. I have never liked it. People would phone up when it was like the biggest TV show in the world, the kind of second, third season. And I would tell them on the phone that I didn't like that show. And I'd be like, what do you like about it? And they would start selling it to me. And once you've got that, you're like, ah, okay, so you need a subscription because blah, blah, blah. That wasn't me being tricky, but I was genuinely like, tell me why I should like this and I don't. And I wonder if that's the kind of approach these folks could use at these sorts of rallies, trying to get the public, look, you know, tell me what you think it could be if it's not aliens. You know, tell me what you think about, what if I said it's not human, but it's not alien? Something different, just a different way of approaching the same conversation. And on that, let's jump to the bodies chat, Dan, because we talk about optics, okay? And again, this isn't us slating stuff, although it's going to sound that way a little bit. And I think it's relevant because some of the folks from the Hollywood Disclosure Alliance, Serena DC and Mike Mazzola, both have been guests on the show, really nice people, were both part of the presentation of Jaime Musan's mummies that they were presenting. And yeah, it kind of went the way I thought it was going to go. From a,
well, a really production... smooth operation with no errors whatsoever that was well rehearsed.
From a production point of view, things did not go smoothly. And again, we're going to, God, optics are a big thing here, okay? We're saying optics, you know, how something looks. Perception is reality, folks. If we put this out and Dan's mic was down really low, my gain was up really high, and there was static in the background and it dropped out all the time, you're not going to make it through the full show. You're not going to make it through an episode. A lot of folks aren't going to come back and listen again if this is their first time.
And people notice that stuff as well.
Oh, like, yeah.
You know, whether I'm working on film or whether I'm, you know, recording with you or, you know, whatever, people notice tiniest things.
Yep.
It needs to be smooth sailing. And I know that that requires a bunch of stressed people on the ground there, but that's kind of the thing you signed up for when you're doing a press conference.
But that's it. Smooth sailing, fine, but not perfection. No one's saying perfection. However, they turned up with, let's go with, these are genuine alien or non-human bodies. They turned up to an event that looked like it was held in an outside gazebo with a table and panel that you couldn't watch one live stream, that was the main one that I was advertising. I helped share that the same as you did, Dan. We all did. In the name of, let's hope that something good comes of this. So we went in with good faith. You then couldn't hear the other live stream. There was then another live stream that was in Spanish, which is fair. Lots of people speak Spanish. I don't, you know, no comprende. So I don't speak Spanish. So I was still watching. That then dropped out the audio. To which people were then jumping about different live streams and getting different things.
I think I posted 7 different links in all, and this was before anything had started. I think the intros were going on, and we were just trying to get a channel with audio that we could hear.
Yeah.
And at this point, you know, you're half hour past the start of your event. Nothing's happening. Someone's hair is on fire there. Just someone hold up their phone and broadcast it on Instagram. You know, right. Like just something, just get it out, because clearly whatever is happening is not working.
Yeah. And then, and this is, again, just from a personal point of view, because that's what a podcast is, folks. I'm not the news. I don't run a major news organization. So this is my opinion. And other folks will think otherwise. Dan may think otherwise.
News is your middle name, just for everyone.
I've got lots of middle names. So for me, if you're presenting something this groundbreaking, this important, and whether it's bullshit or not, Dan, and I'm going to say that, I think this subject's important, as do you, so I want to see it handled seriously. If you present a body that you then break the finger of live on camera,
or at least
show that you've broken it, that doesn't look good. That looks really, really clumsy. And you're telling me, bear in mind, and people always get in touch with me and say, Andy, you're not an idiot. Don't talk down about yourself. I know I'm not an idiot, but I mean, in terms of understanding that science, you have to explain that to me like I'm an idiot. One, they don't. But two, what I do understand is you've got a very delicate thing, very delicate piece of scientific evidence, and you've broken it. If it's genuine, it's the most important piece of scientific evidence on the planet. If that is genuine, it's the most valuable thing on the planet.
Ever.
It probably doesn't have a cost to it. It's that it's genuinely invaluable. It's a genuine non-human body, hybrid, mummy, whatever. You've broke it on a live stream, on multiple live streams, of which most of them are broken. So when some of the very lovely people who I've conversed with who were involved in it, and we were dead polite, I was dead polite, Dan, you got involved, other people did, you know, they're so determined that we are being very biased in this, but it's very hard to not be when it's put across so badly and handled so badly. And again, there seemed to be nothing other than forget all the crap here that's went along with it. These are genuine. I've still not had explained to me in a way that shows why these are genuine. Because all I see is when I go onto these things and I look to the folks who are commenting that might know better than me, I'll jump into someone's bio. Are they a doctor? Are they a physicist? Are they a surgeon? Regardless of the 20 or 30 people you tell me worked on it. Because do you know what? Those really highly qualified people, someone broke it. So for me, let me see what others are saying. And I've seen nothing to say this wasn't anything other than a bit of a shit show again. So if you're associated, and whether that's the HDA, I'm sorry, that's not a good look. And someone needs to come out and go, do you know what? Even if it is, we still have a lot of faith in these bodies, but this was really badly handled and they don't do that. People can't swallow their pride and say, do you know what? We effed up, but there is something to this, and we want you to bear with us. All they do is double down and tell you why you're wrong. I was accused of being a what? A US low-level podcast, something blah, blah, blah. And I went, for a start, I'm not even from the US. Low-level podcast, I'll give you that. But all you're doing is jumping and criticizing me or something. But I'm like, please explain this to me, why this is genuine, because nothing you've told me so far shows that it is. Rant over. Sorry.
No, it's a great rant. I can't disagree with anything there. I like seeing you on fire like that. Andy's even wearing like this fire orange hoodie. If you can't see the video, so
it's my face reflecting off it.
I do believe so. Yeah, I mean, where to even start? I completely agree with you. At the point, you know, I'm someone that's interested, and I was there, willing to, you know, happy to watch and really intrigued by what they had to present, because we were told there was going to be some new stuff, some new people involved. They had new information for us. It was all drummed up. You know, we had a slick website to sign up to. And then, yeah, right off the start, we end up with like 7 or 8 different streams, some that you can hear the English on, some that sounds like someone's talking like 50 feet from the microphone. Another one where you've got a translator, but they're being spoken over by the Spanish speaker, so you just can't hear. And so it just ends up being a complete, like, well, just a bit of a clusterfuck, right? Stream failed so many times. Then I noticed on the invite, they said, oh, these are unknown organisms. You know,
they moved away from alien.
That was it. They moved away from alien.
Totally fair. And I thought that was a good
I said they should do that early on. But then the TV channel that they're presenting it on, Spark TV, says literally on it that we're a channel to present alien stuff. So immediately, you know, you're not on a news network, you're not on a platform that seems objective, you're on a platform that is preaching to the choir. The only people that are present there are people who are into the idea that these are ET, or people that are kind of interested, but already, you know, I'm still in the subject. I'm not someone from outside the subject that's watching this. If I was outside the subject, I would have switched off a lot sooner than I did. Because of the,
I don't think they switched on. That's my problem.
Yes, they did not switch on, and they didn't make it appealing. So even if you consider that they're preaching to the choir, there's only people that are interested in active participants, and you know, all people that are ready to full on embrace this. They messed up so badly that it went from about it was around 500 people before the stream started. And then by the time they actually got a stream working, it was 248 people. This was the Spark TV channel with 2,000 subscribers. Then I switched over to the Jaime Maswan's channel. He has 1 million subscribers. However, there were 2,500 watching. So we couldn't even break 3,000 people within the UFO community to watch this, right? And not to say that popular means correct or anything like that, but
no.
if this is a big, you know, oh my God, we found something that is not of this world or is crazy, and we want to present it in a really spectacular way. This isn't the audience that you need. Jaime early on said the team didn't want to present these bodies at the Mexican hearing, and he insisted. So those bodies literally wouldn't have been at the UFO hearing of Mexico if Jaime had listened to the scientists involved in the project. Yeah. I think that speaks volumes. Jaime is the one pushing the extraterrestrial non-human angle on this. The scientists are stepping carefully. There are a few scientists in the team that talk throughout the kind of presentation. And as they're talking, it became very apparent to me that they didn't agree with Jaime on what these things were. They kept saying unknown DNA, and Jaime would go,
yeah,
do you hear that? Non-human. No, unknown, not 100%. Non-human. We yeah. have DNA that we share with a goddamn banana that we could say is part human, right? It doesn't mean that it's an alien. It's not evidence for it. It just means you can't read it. And that really frustrated me. It became more apparent as it went on. So
do you know what that's the same as, Dan? But the other way around is when you have people like Moultrie or Kirkpatrick or Goff, whoever, saying that being clever with language, and they're saying, you know, we've got no evidence that these things are extraterrestrial. That may be technically correct based on what they do have. And all this is, and we've got to be fair, is flip it round. You've got someone on the other side of the conversation where scientists are trying to say, look, we're still investigating this. We don't know. There's unknown here. And he's going, ah, see, alien. And it's just the other side of the coin. And neither side, neither side looks good.
Absolutely. Like, at the very least, you'd expect a meeting to get everyone on the same page, you know, to talk about this stuff. Jaime said, we don't have anything to hide. If I was faking this, I'd hide it. I wouldn't risk 50 years of my career. I mean, again, like I say, he's the only person saying there's extraterrestrial, that it's non-human intelligence.
Yeah.
No one else is. So, I mean, sure, you wouldn't risk 50 years of your career, but when the other hoaxes were done 20 years ago and 10 years ago, you would have said the same thing. So it's just not convincing me. And once again, I just want listeners to know, just because Jaime pulled hoaxes before, it doesn't mean that this is a hoax. However, it does raise some flags for people that they should be aware of. That's all I'm saying by bringing that up. Jaime referenced Grush talking about the bodies and then said it's time to reveal them, as if he's revealing the bodies that Grush was talking about. No, absolute bullshit. This isn't what Grush was talking about at all. This is Jaime grabbing something that's unrelated and pulling it into the conversation. Ryan Graves walked out of the Mexico hearing because these bodies were presented and they were called ET. It has since transpired that he was actually told that they were going to present some anthropological evidence at the hearing, but it was only when they revealed it how they did that he saw exactly what was going on and left, which I'm sure a lot of us would do the same thing, right?
Yeah. I saw a few tweets on that back and forward from the folks involved, again, the ones who presented this. And again, it was largely that Ryan Graves was aware we were going to present evidence of ET bodies. And I've seen various, as in his IC handlers told him to leave when it happened, or he got up and left because he didn't want to be involved, or it was too much for him. And yeah, it just looks like maybe they did say to him, look, we're going to present some stuff today. And then when he saw it, he's went, no, I don't want to be tarred with this brush right now.
Exactly. And just
Dan, can you said,
yeah, go for it.
It would be very easy for me and you or anyone to sit here doing this kind of stuff that we do and really wax lyrical. I'm using some really strange phrases today, by the way, I apologize. To go over the top and be really for this, because from an engagement, from an impressions point of view, from regular updates, I could have put out loads of stuff on this, tons of clips on Twitter, got loads of engagement, made another $5 from Elon Musk on Twitter, X, and had loads of eyes on it by saying I believe this. And I'm like, I want this to be genuine. I would love nothing more, again, than to sit here in a few months and go, Jaime Misan, welcome to the podcast. You know what? I doubted you, and I'll put my hand up. Wow, this was amazing that you've managed to get this out, and we've got this person on board, this person's on board, but I cannot see that happening. And that's disappointing for me. So yeah, I don't have too much to add to the body stuff, but I don't know about you, Dan.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just kind of round it out. I wanted to touch on that thing about the IC handlers and stuff like that. I'm seeing this happen a lot. When someone disagrees with someone in the UFO community, they get called, you work for the CIA, you work at Eglin Air Force Base, you have IC handlers and stuff like that. No, we just disagree with you. Like, there's this weird entrenchment that happens at these extremes of the conversation. If you fully believe, you know, in starseeds and all that kind of area of stuff, that these things are ET, they're coming from Zeta Reticuli, you know, something like that. You have an idea of what these are. That's one extreme. And then the other extreme is the debunkers. Both ends of those people, for some reason, you know, if you say to a debunker, oh, I think this is a UFO because XYZ, you get told that you're not looking at it properly, that you're a UFO believer, that yada, yada, yada. And then, you know, my next interaction right after that kind of interaction is to talk with one of the actual believers and say, whoa, calm down. You know, like the bodies aren't, there's nothing here that says that they're ET, but I'm curious why you think they're ET, if I missed something in the DNA and so on and so forth. And you just get accused of having IC handlers and being paid by the government. I am not getting paid by the government. It would be awesome if I was. I'm sure they have a superior paycheck. But that kind of thing has to stop. Like, genuine conversations is something I miss in this community. Just kind of assuming that no one's stupid. We're all pretty switched on and we all have our ideas and we should listen to each other a bit. It's getting to be like political discourse, you know, and that's not what this is. This is meant to be bipartisan. We're meant to all come together as a species to face this threat. I think Reagan was proven wrong when those kind of accusations were thrown around, because, you know, we are not alone. It doesn't seem to bring us together. It seemed to divide it into different camps and things like that. So I just wanted to touch on that. Jaime's lawyer spent a little time talking about how they're suing the Peruvian government for their lies, that these are a hoax and so on and so forth. Be curious to see where that goes. You know, just suing someone doesn't prove that they're telling the truth. We'll let that go through a court of law and see what they say. But, you know, brave to do if they're not telling the truth and they know it. The scientific presentation in this, it was all the same stuff. I've watched the previous one. It was all the same stuff as before. There was nothing new. They put, like, the highlight of it for me was that they put QR codes up so you could scan them and you could download the actual work. I'll give the link to Andy and, you know, you can download it if you want. It's just the DNA stores. When I checked the next day, those links had actually gone down for whatever reason. But yeah, they're not letting people go and take their own DNA samples from a known part of the body, because the general practice is that you take a DNA kind of sample from inside the bones. So you know that, you know, there's nothing coated on the surface of the skin or some degradation's happening. If you go inside the bone, then you know, you're getting the purest stuff that's available. Could be they took a patch from this creature's eyebrow or something and it's contaminated and that's the unknown DNA. This is the reason for chain of custody and letting scientists take their samples.
Sorry, Dan, was that not even a disagreement, and I might have got this wrong, in the actual presentation, that one presenter said these things had eyebrows and one didn't?
Yes, I forgot about the eyebrows.
Yeah.
So again, that messaging, right? You know, I was so frustrated with it. That one of the guys that was seen as more professional during this, Fernando Corello, he's been working with Jaime since 2017. He's not a new face here. You know, we really need some new scientists in and to look at it. But I pretty much got up to the bit where when they showed the finger was snapped, I believe my tweet was, they've just damaged the expletive body. It's snapped and it's hanging off. The most precious samples in the history of the world. I'm done with this. Shame on you all. And yeah, that was my experience with it. And I'm someone that's up for this ET conversation, you know? If they can't convince us and they can't keep us on board, that's a problem. We're going to see them being wheeled out in carny freak shows, and you can pay $15 to go touch one of the alien mummies soon, I guarantee it.
Yeah, and this isn't a drama show, and never will be. And we want this stuff to be real and presented well and genuine. So, yeah, to be continued, I imagine.
I feel like the first half hour of this has just been really negative. Let's find some positive things to talk about.
Yeah, next up, apocalyptic scenarios, Dan. What's the best way for the planet to explode? Tim Gallaudet, so a bit of science, Dan. This is one for folks. Rear Admiral retired Timothy Gallaudet wrote the first published white paper for the Sol Foundation. I believe that language is correct. Basically, for people like me who like it in layman's terms, sciencey paper. It was titled "Beneath the Surface: We May Learn More About UAP by Looking in the Ocean." So just to summarize, really, Dan, I don't want to go into it in lots of detail, but I've got a few questions to ask you off the back of it. Focus was on oceanic UAPs, USOs, UFOs underwater, whatever you want to call them. The paper emphasizes the significance of studying UAP and unidentified submersible objects in the ocean, not just the air. Case examples, it discussed the Tic Tac UAP, the Aguadilla UAP, Puerto Rico incident, highlighting transmedium UAPs moving between air and water seamlessly. It pointed out maritime security risks. So as much as we hear about, you know, and we'll come to this soon, Dan, pilots in the air encountering these things, close collisions with planes and aircraft, you know, there's nothing to say that same thing won't happen with boats, submarines, etc., under the water, even like offshore oil rigs, you know, those kind of structures. What are the scientific potential of this, Dan? Some of that was that these phenomena could lead to revolutionary advancements in various fields, comparing the potential impact to the scientific revolution of the 17th and 18th centuries. So, you know, actually studying this stuff, getting it right, we could see a huge technological leap, massive. Government research basically discussed the role of government agencies, academic institutions and research and this kind of stuff. Largely, I mean, that's just the Sol Foundation down to a T for me. That's what they want. Government, academics, scientists, you know, thinkers, get involved. Let's discuss this. Let's work on it together and see what we can do. Can we produce results? And I think that's got to be something that comes of this. And I think that's where some of these organizations, Dan, that we've been talking about, we want them to produce results. Doesn't have to be what people like. It just has to be results that are factual and backed up by evidence. And that's what I think Sol Foundation, for many folks who maybe have a similar line of thinking to us, is probably one of those kind of shining lights of you know, hope in the horizon. And then there was like recommended actions for US government academics and whatnot off the back of that as well. Thoughts you read through it, Dan?
Yeah, I really enjoyed them. So once again, you know, we look at these things and we kind of say, who are they for? Are they for us? And yeah, we get to read them, you know, but a white paper tends to be, it's informing you of the issuing body's kind of philosophy on what they're looking at, which I felt like this does, and so did their other paper they released. It's not about, are UAPs real? It's, let's characterize them, let's log them, let's see what's there and kind of follow this path. That path, as you touched on, there's potent scientific improvements along those paths. There are countless studies of ocean life, of our planet, of things like that, that will advance the conversation in other fields as well. So Tim really pushes on this. There were a few things I wanted to touch on that were mentioned. So for example, the Catalina Channel, you know, where the Nimitz activity kind of happened, that's mentioned. And, you know, I spent a little bit of time in the Catalina Channel on Catalina. We saw nothing. We did see Starlink come up, and I have a video of a whole group of barbecuers freaking out at Starlink and yelling it's an alien spaceship, and then 2 seconds later going back to barbecuing without a care in the world. So that's what happens during disclosure. People just carry on, basically.
Imagine if you had brought the food along yourself and charged $1,000 to see that Starlink. You could have called yourself Stephen Keir. I'm sorry, folks. I'm being negative now. That was just a joke.
I can see you flaring up there.
Barbecue included. I know.
So there's a mention of an undersea anomaly. This comes up a lot off the coast of, you know, Catalina. They call it the Malibu anomaly. They'd say it's like an alien or underwater alien base. It kind of looks like there's pillars in the pictures. And recently, the picture of it got changed on Google Earth, so people think that Google have removed it. No, no, and no. Basically, this has been studied countless times by different groups. They've gone down with ROVs and looked at it. These are natural formations. And just, you know, because everyone's reaction is going to be, yeah, yeah, that's what they want you to think. One of these studies was done by MUFON. Chase Kloetsky and MUFON put a team together of marine experts, and they all went, they looked at it. They deemed that, you know, around volcanic vents and in that part of the world on a kind of fault line, you would expect to see the structure that was there. You've also got to remember that the scan that you were looking at wasn't a scan of the seabed in the way that we think of it. You know, you're not scanning it like you are land.
Yeah.
A lot of the seabed map is kind of implied from how the surface of the ocean kind of changes and looks. You know, you can kind of measure the changes, and the scanning of the seabed is happening kind of now. It's a really modern issue. So the update on Google Earth happened because they've actually scanned that seabed now, and what's actually there is viewable. So, you know, there's not an alien base there. It's a perfectly
Dan,
normal thing. But
how much did your IC handlers pay you to say that? That's really easy to do, actually. I might do that more often.
It really is, yeah. We should see how many times we can get it in every shot. But what, like a swear jar.
Can I say something, though? And this is where, like, I like to think that I'm still quite, like, grounded and don't get too caught up in the BS with this. That's like disappointing to hear, because I saw the pictures. It was Kelly Chase that shared them. I know the change, and a lot of people, that's where I saw the initial update.
Yeah, it's come up a Tim lot Gallaudet, recently.
Tim Gallaudet had shared that initially, hadn't he? And I think that's what I'd seen it the first time. And that's like disappointing. But that is the stuff where you go, I kind of thought there was something to that. I showed people I work with that picture, like, look at that, and they've changed it. But then you hear that and you go, and it's fine to be disappointed though, because I go, that's kind of another thing off the evidence list. But
that's it, isn't it? Like, the fact is, it's a question mark before, and we've got to get it from a question mark to a full stop. And this thing has got there. You know, the paper's out there. If you Google Malibu anomaly study, you will come across the paper. You will see the presentations. You will see everything. I love that they were open with it. It's great. So I love the part where they were talking about the different parts of the ocean. You know, there's muddiness there, there's different conditions, so you kind of need different sensors. It's not a case of building one sensor and it's suitable for the whole ocean. I think that that's something that people don't really grok. You know, you it's not just you're in the water now. There are different depths, there are different requirements, there are different pressures, all that kind of stuff. Tim highlights the gaps in domain awareness, result in incursions in training areas and nuclear sites. That's the Chinese balloon, right? Like, I could be describing that and not just UAP. So we have to close that gaps, whether it's the balloon or whether it's not, or whether it's something else, have to close that those gaps. And the more advanced we become, the more gaps we're going to find that we didn't realize were there, right? And we just have to close them. That's it. And all the science we learn along the way.
Yeah. And it's fair to say the study of UFOs, as it gets more advanced and more technical and the science gets better and the equipment gets better, you're going to come across other things like the balloon situations, different technologies that aren't non-human. It is our stuff. Yep. But because our way of looking for this stuff has changed, so does what you come across. So there is always going to be that overlap. So that's why I get why there are plenty of elements of this that the Air Force and other departments and people and organizations will look and go, this isn't non-human technology, it's just top secret tech. Well, I don't doubt it, but I don't think it all is. That's the thing with me. Can I ask a question,
exactly,
Dan?
Sure.
Do you think at this point we really need to still categorize USOs any differently? All we're seeing is these are the same objects we're seeing in the air and in space, but they're underwater. Is that fair? Or do you think there's still a good reason to categorize the actual object as a USO?
I see it as kind of a messaging thing. You know, if you've been paying attention to this, you know that unidentified anomalous phenomena are transmedium. You can see in legislation passed, they've defined these things. They've said, you know, transmedium means it can move between space and air, or air and water, or water to space. You know, those issues for us are very clear. For someone like, and I always do this, my mom, you know, she doesn't think of these things. To her, she thinks aliens will be in space and maybe in the air around us, you know, like flying in the air. She doesn't think of transmedium or what that could mean. So I think that's mostly there to kind of appeal to the audience here. And the audience with a paper like this, you know, the Sol Foundation has been very open about the fact that they want to inform policy and policy change. I think their audience are people unfamiliar with UAP in positions of authority that can have an impact on policy change. So in that regard, I can see why it's differentiated and drilled down on. And for the Sol Foundation, you know, USOs kind of get left behind really in terms of talking about UFOs. Yeah. Whereas the Sol Foundation, one of their first two white papers are on USOs. This is great. You know, it's highlighted an area that we don't really think about, people outside the community don't really think about. And it's doing it in a way that at a time where ocean science is getting a big kick up the ass and it's being funded like crazy, you know, all these satellites are going up that can see beneath the waves, like the ocean floors are being mapped. While we're doing it, let's do this stuff as well. You know, it's a really well-timed kind of thing.
Do you think there's any element of USOs that don't come out the water and they are exclusively an underwater phenomenon?
Quite possibly. You know, this paper touches on prosaic things that kind of remain in the water. And I think the thing to highlight here is it talks about unexpected life as we don't know it. You know, where we always talk about, when we're talking about life from elsewhere, we say life as we know it, life as we know it, because life as we know it is us. Life as we know it is everything on this planet. It's made with DNA. It needs water. It needs this. Like, it, we see it in a very particular way. And I get it. That's fair. That's what we have experience with. But this paper rightfully touches on a discovery in 1977 that there were vents that had, with organisms that had never been seen before, pressures of the ocean that we didn't think they'd survive. And we call them extremophiles. And they reside in environments of extreme temperature, depth, chemical concentration, and even kind of ghost-like mushrooms, tube worms, crabs, all these kind of life that happens around those kind of underwater vents, that instead of using things like photosynthesis, they use something called chemosynthesis, where they synthesize their own chemicals and stuff from the nutrients in the air, sorry, in the water around those vents. It's important for us to understand that there could be life in the ocean that we say is USO that might not be the same thing that's in the air. It could just be an ocean phenomena, but it doesn't mean that it's any less wondrous, you know? Even if we take the scenario of, think of the abyss.
Yeah.
They're water creatures. We're only going to see them by going underwater. So their domain would be the water, right? They would fit kind of what your question was addressing. So absolutely, you know, there's life in the oceans that we don't know is there right now. We just will never know unless we look. So we're kind of trying to get ignorance, so we're out this conversation. Life that we didn't think that could exist is there. So we kind of have to look everywhere because it seems to be in a place wherever we look. It reminds me of Tom DeLonge's comment that the universe is teeming with life. And these are kind of our baby steps, looking in the ocean to see things that survive there that we didn't think could exist. And one of those things could very well be a really rare form of intelligent life.
It's been a while since I've mentioned this or asked you, but do you think there's chance... There's always a chance, right? But what do you think realistically it's like that there is a civilization like us, but it lives under the oceans? It's evolved there. Life for them, they are technologically advanced, but maybe don't come out the water, and we're as alien to them as they are to us. Do you think that's still a bit too much of a stretch? Or even then, do you go, what about underneath the ocean and under the Earth's crust, where you start going a bit new Godzilla?
Now you're into my level of the stuff I love talking about. Like, basically anywhere where we currently think there isn't life, in people's heads they should start understanding that there's very likely life there. These extremophiles keep proving to us over and over again that life survives in conditions we didn't think it can survive in. It can be made in ways that we didn't think it could be made. We came out of the ocean, so it could just be an us that decided to stay in the ocean and separate.
Something came out and went,
"Oh,
that is cold. I'm going back."
Yeah, screw that. I'm off. I'm going back in. But you know, to that civilization, coming out of the water and exploring the air would be just as incredible to them as us going to the bottom of the Mariana Trench and, you know, scooting around there in a machine that we made. You know, we really need to get out of our comfort zones when kind of talking about potential life. And it's only a question mark, right? And how do we answer that question? Do we say, hey, Dan, we're going to specifically go look for NHI under the ocean? No, you just map it. You look at the wildlife there. You look at what's happening. You look at the ecosystem, and whatever you find, you find, you know? So everyone kind of wants the same thing here, right?
It starts
just to look.
Yeah, it starts to go into that Atlantis type side of things and conversation,
yes,
doesn't it? And do you know, I've actually, it's a bit of a side, not a side, but because it's related, but Jimmy Corsetti does some stuff on that. And I know he's been on Rogan on Twitter and stuff. And I'd quite like to talk to him. He follows me, but he's never DM'd me or read my DMs that I've sent him.
I messaged him a few times, but I can give you some pointers for people to talk to that he kind of stole his stuff from.
Stole. Everyone's stolen from everyone. Everyone's stolen from everyone.
It's
The Simpsons.
I don't mind people being inspired by people. You know, that happens. What is it that Picasso said? That good artists create, great artists steal. But when you present an idea as your own, and when people kind of bring up these earlier sources, you say, no, this was me, it started with me, then that's where it gets a bit ropey for me. So that's why I say that.
Okay.
There are some richer sources for you to go to. Happy to highlight those. And they, you know, the idea of the RICAT structure or the RICAT structure, this is the kind of the theory that Jimmy pushes, that Atlantis was this kind of ring structure in Northeast Africa, sorry. That site is fairly unexplored. It's really hard to get to. It's a really interesting site, regardless of all the Atlantis stuff. So once again, there's a question mark there. Let's get looking. It's just a bit remote, so it's really hard to get there. I think I remember reading some guy went there and it took him like 3-4 days to even drive there, and it's across open desert, and you have to have people, like a whole group of people with you that are prepping, that, you know, live there, and kind of like the Sherpas on Everest, right? You okay. want the locals to take you. So yeah, it's really remote, hasn't really been explored. There are, I've seen people find fish bones and things like that there. So this area used to be underwater. So it's worth exploring, you know? It's absolutely worth exploring.
If I say to you, Dan, and this will be relevant to a tiny portion of the audience, east of Mombasa, does that mean anything to you, that location?
East of Mombasa? God, yeah. there are so many for Atlantis.
Yeah, no. There's a few people laughing their heads off at this right now, probably about 10. But yeah, what's east of Mombasa, Dan?
I don't know. What is east of Mombasa?
Is there much? I think it is ocean. I think it is water. But yeah. Anyway, Dan, we're going to move on from that. I wouldn't waste your time searching it, but to the few people who...
The one thing I just did want to add there is the RICAT structure is also one of the places that, I want to say way back in the 50s and 60s, the US government did electromagnetic studies of different areas around the planet, and some of them were really sus. One of them was the RICAT structure, which is another reason it kind of gets flagged up as this weird thing. Because it's like, why are they scanning that? Like, if it's a natural geographical formation, yeah. like, that's really weird that you would do that. So yeah, I wanted to highlight that because there is some funny business with the US government and the RICAT structure. Yeah. One thing just before we move on from Tim's paper, he says technologies of unknown origin. I don't want to take credit for my bingo card in the 2024 roundtable being correct, but I think I said devices of unknown origin would become a phrase used a lot this year, and I saw that and I was just like, it begins. So there was a nice kind of end paragraph that Tim ended with. He said, no matter how much is learned about UAP in the atmosphere, a complete understanding of anomalous phenomena will remain hidden absent dedicated research into our largely unknown oceans. Without gazing into the abyss, one will never know if the abyss does not indeed return the gaze. I thought that was a really like strong way to finish.
And do you think he's hinting to go and watch The Abyss again? Do you think that's what
I think
is?
He is, yeah. Yeah, it's his favourite movie. We should go.
He wants that Blu-ray release, doesn't he? IMAX back in the cinema. Do it. If you own a cinema chain, do it. Dan, from the ocean to the air, very quickly, Wisconsin Congressman Glenn Grothman. He was talking about co-sponsoring a bill that mandates the FAA, the Federal Aviation Authority, investigation of UFOs. Basically, this was on the news a few days ago, making sure that pilots and other folks in the air, cabin crew and such, can report their UFO sightings without any fear of stigma or ridicule. And he said as well they were trying to get more private briefings about UFOs to try and understand the subject more. I thought that was really interesting as well, given it was around the same time, about a week after, member of the European Parliament, Francisco Guerrero, he pushed for changes in the law within the EU, that's the European Union, to our American listeners and folks around the world, to update regulations on reporting, analysis, and basically the follow-up of UFO UAP reports. Not big news, but for me in the sense it was nice to see these little bits and pockets of information happening in different places around the world. And for me, I've put here, Dan, there were relatively small drops of water in the pond, but this could be how that capital D disclosure comes together through all these little avenues that folks don't think of, don't pay attention to, and yet it's a kind of multi-pronged attack or movement to get to that place where actually, do you know what? This happened here, this happened here, this happened here. Away from, you know, the halls of Congress and stuff like that, but oh, the aviation authorities got involved because of reporting changes, and then it happened in, you know, Africa, then it happened over here as well, then India got involved with something, and all these daft little things, kind of unassuming, maybe boring for a lot of folks as well, they'll look back and go, ah, that had an impact, but maybe kind of butterfly wing type impact down the line.
100%. I totally agree. There was another Sol white paper released where they mentioned kind of things going on in other countries and seeing, you know, we had, it was USA, Canada, Russia, China, Uruguay, Japan, India, Brazil, Peru, Chile, France, and the UK are all kind of, you know, they've all studied it, have active programs, or took it seriously enough that, you know, they thought it was a threat once. So this is becoming a snowball. And, you know, like you say, a few drops kind of becomes a puddle, and then it becomes a pond, and then it becomes an ocean. This is the way we kind of built the case for it, to make it be taken seriously. All these places should be open with their data, with their encounters, with everything that happened, from, you know, pilot radiation readings to witness testimony to markets on the ground. Everyone should be feeding in somewhere to some central place that hasn't yet been established. And what I loved about Francesco Guerrero's, probably saying that wrong, Guerrero, what I loved about his presentation was he kind of brought people from all over. You know, it wasn't just Europeans. Yeah. There were some European organizations, but as well, we had a commercial pilot. We had, you know, Ryan Graves from the US kind of over to talk about things. Avi Loeb was there as well. We had some new faces. Eduardo Russo, who runs a EuroUFO.net and UAP Check, he was there to give historical context. We had Joachim Dekkers, the UAP Coalition of the Netherlands, giving an introduction to UAP. Yeah. I know, right? It's a solid name. But we're starting to see some new faces come through. And these aren't faces of just people that are like, yeah, I kind of like UFOs. These are faces of people who are in official positions who are kind of, you know, the ears are perking up. And they're kind of feeling like they want to step out from behind their guarded wall and say, hey, hold on a second, everybody stop shooting. There does seem to be something in the sky. Can we maybe look at it? That's a monumental change. And that's going to keep going. So I'm really curious to kind of see where this goes, you know, in the next EU session, if anyone picks it up and things like that. I would say to people, contact members of the European Parliament and tell them to pay attention to it and send them the video of the event. Francisco has put that up now on the channel. That's available for people. Send them that. You know, it's a really concise, really well presented, really considerate of optics event that will put this in a serious light for people that might not be informed about it yet. So props to Francisco. You know, he's not up for re-election next year, but just it's got to start somewhere, and just he should be proud of himself. He rocked it. Yeah. And everyone involved.
From what I understand, speaking to sources close to me, he's never broken any alien body parts either. So that's always a bonus. That's petty, isn't it? I'm in a funny mood for this one. Sorry.
I like it.
Yeah. But regular programming will resume in future. Dan, when we start wrapping up, I know there's a few bits to still touch on. I wanted to say shout out to Ross Coulthart with his new show Reality Check on News Nation's YouTube platform. I don't think it's on TV, is it? I'm not sure if it's on their actual, and we don't get to see that in the UK, but I know it's definitely on the YouTube and it's getting really good views and stuff. If it's on the actual News Nation.
Did you say on the YouTube?
On the YouTube, yeah.
On the YouTube, I love it.
Exclusively on Bebo and MySpace. So yeah, I'm down with the kids. So yeah, but it was pretty cool to see that online exclusive, I think, through News Nation. There was no impact on the Need to Know podcast with Bryce Zabel. He was very quick to say. For me, I've only got to watch the Danny Sheehan episode first, which was the first one. There's been two since, or one since, sorry. The second was with DC correspondent Joe Khalil, who is also one of his colleagues from News Nation, who reports on UFO, UAP, among other things as well. But it seemed like, especially that first one, it aimed at folks maybe newer to the topic. I'm guessing that News Nation audience who maybe aren't UFO, UAP centric and are they're catching Ross Coulthart on News Nation because that's where they go to for their news. And regardless what folks, if they do or don't like Ross, you know, I got on really well with Ross Coulthart and appreciate his reporting. This is a really good thing where you've got a news channel that has a show dedicated in part to UFO or UAP. Ross himself said on Need to Know the other week with Bryce that it wasn't going to be exclusively UFO and UAP content, but I imagine it largely will be. But I think that's a really nice platform to have that, and I would love to see that kind of thing happen more. So props to News Nation because they picked up on the topic early. Let's be fair, they saw it was getting engagement, impressions, clicks and views. And as a growing network, that's helped them grow. But they've stuck with it, which is always good to see. They've not just binned it at the first chance. So really, really well deserved. And yeah, Danny Sheehan, he had his usual conversation. I think we've talked about that kind of stuff quite a lot on here, Dan.
Yeah.
What's going to kind of catch people's attention, I think, that are new to the topic is Danny talking about going down to see those files where he saw documents and photographs of alleged crash saucers, you know, winter scene, snow on the ground, classic saucer, 40 to 50 foot across. And he shows those symbols that were traced as well. So, yeah. Alas, where do you sit on that, though? The you know, Danny Sheehan going down into this, you know, these classified files or non, sorry, declassified files and get to see stuff. And
it was the, if I remember rightly, it was the classified blue book files that he was getting to see. And you know, it's not the first time something like that's come up. There, a lot of UFO reports have people shown a folder of UFOs, a binder of UFOs. To have a look at, and you know, to say it was like this, it was like this, it was like this. That file is something that comes up again and again and again throughout history, and I'd love to see it. Someone has it, and it seems to be in an official capacity that this exists, so I'd love to see it. The stuff that Danny got to see, where he, you know, supposedly traced the letters on the back of his notebook into the cardboard, so, you know, the person checking out his notepad didn't see them when he was leaving, and then he had kind of a pencil impression that he could lift of the symbols.
Yeah.
Danny's said this story a lot, and like I this isn't even about judging whether I believe it or not, but Danny revealed those symbols at a certain time, and he's been asked again and again and again to produce those symbols, right? So I went back and I grabbed screenshots from all of the different interviews where Danny has presented these. The first place he presented them, then there was like a year gap, and then there was another place. Every single one, the symbols are exactly the same. So whether people want to think
that's
that he's
good.
Practicing these symbols just to kind of BS us, or they're a genuine thing that he's relaying, it doesn't matter. It's consistent.
Yeah.
So
that's fair.
There's a there, you know, and unless he's completely pulling the wool over everyone's eyes, you know, which I don't think is the case. I'm more with you, you know, that he just hears so much that it's hard to keep it all separate. And so,
you know,
sometimes
Danny,
stuff gets mixed in.
Danny Sheehan is a wonderful litmus test for folks in the UFO topic or community, because depending on what side of the fence or conversation you fall, and if we just take two extremes, okay, and these aren't exclusive, but the Lou Elizondo camp, Dan, you've stayed at his bloody house, you've talked about enough, so you're there, and then you've got folks who are Stephen Greer fanatics who will happily go to Greer's conferences, events, whatever it might be.
I'd stay at Greer's house as well, just to, you know, put out.
Oh, you're a whore
for
that.
If he wanted to bring me over and play me that goal and we'd have a chat about what he really knows, I'm down for that.
Yeah. But that's fair. So there's two extremes of the conversation. Danny Sheehan has played with both of those worlds.
Yep.
So I think that's one of those, like, you could go, Lou Elizondo's full of bullshit. Stephen Greer's full of bullshit. One's telling the truth, one's not. Whatever it might be, Danny Sheehan's played both sides, been involved with both sides, and then everyone else in between as well. So he gets around, good, bad, and different, however that might be. He's probably one of the most interesting guys in this topic, whether folk kind of like that or not, because he's probably been involved in whatever it is. And this is aimed at the person watching or listening to this. Whatever you like about this topic, he's probably got some direct involvement with it in some way, shape, or form. Which, for me, that speaks to he has something about him that he's been exposed to or involved in. But I don't know. It's a really funny one because no one's infallible. I'll just say that much.
Yeah, and I think that's totally fair. You know, there was up to a point in the community, a lot of people were on board with Greer, and then they kind of split off and there are schisms and stuff. But you're right, Danny's a really interesting test that's between a lot of things in this community. And let's be honest, you know, a lawyer takes jobs. It's not about what he believes. But for him to repeatedly involve himself professionally in this field over and over and over again, when from his credentials, he could be off making a lot of money representing, you know, different people against big corporations in the court of law, it speaks to something. And I don't know what that is. I'm as curious as everybody else about him. But until I can read his mind, I can't tell you, you know?
Just gotta keep listening. Yeah, that's a fair point. Just for me, he gave me an hour of his time. I've never paid a guest. I never would, I don't think, depending on the circumstance. But just for what they come on and do, you know, they give me their time for free, which is appreciated. A lot of guests come on to promote something, which is totally fair. That's okay. He gives me his time, and he wasn't selling anything. He wasn't, you know, promoting something massive. He was talking about the bill, the NDAA, the work he was doing. As we recorded, he's getting phone calls and texts and all that kind of stuff. And he could have done that on much bigger platforms. He didn't have to come on here and talk to me about it, but he did. And I think that for me, you know, says at least something that they're trying to do something they believe is right. Whereas you do have, and I won't even name any names here. There are other folks who I've invited on or tried to get in touch with who haven't, but they will go on much bigger platforms. So fair play to the ones who do come on, who don't owe me or any smaller podcast anything, but they still give you some of their time when it's available. Whereas others, they will literally, it has to be a big platform. And that maybe says more for me rather than the message. It's about, you know, the numbers. That's not wrong though. That doesn't necessarily say what they're doing or saying is wrong, but I think it maybe speaks stronger for the ones who do say, do you know what? You get 500 viewers or streamers or you know, 5,000 or 50,000, then I'll give you some of your time. But there's others who go, nah, draw the line at 500,000. So fair play.
Yeah, sure. You know, props to Danny. I believe he has a book, The People's Choice, that I would recommend people go read that. It's really hefty. I've given it to a friend of mine who is a lawyer because I want him to kind of filter, you know, the lawyer language and tell me, you know, what's going on with Danny and what he thinks about him, because he'll just be more informed on that stuff than I am.
Do you want to rattle through a few last things, Dan, kind of quick fire style? And then, but can you leave the last thing to be the three body thing?
Oh yeah, sure. Absolutely. So we had a reveal of information from Douglas Dean Johnson. He posts a lot of congressional stuff. He retrieved through FOIA something that was mentioned last year. It was the Joint Chiefs of Staff Worldwide Unidentified Anomalous Phenomena Reporting Procedures. They were issued May 19th, 2023. They were mentioned in an article. We've never seen them. They came out and a few places are mentioned, but just to kind of summarize it without going into crazy details here. So one, it mentions the place where David Grush worked, that they would have been issued this stuff to. So that kind of speaks to Grush's story there. But also it goes into kind of exactly what the department heads want people to be looking at when they're out in the field. And obviously from the Arrow report, we have one idea of what the US government is telling people in the field to look for. Whereas from this document, it's night and day difference. Here, this document says, we don't want you to tell us about balloons. We don't want you to tell us about really boring, prosaic stuff. We do want you to tell us about things that, and I'll read this as quotes because, I don't want to get it wrong, but they want to know about any UAP that displayed, and this is the quote, anomalous characteristics or behaviors, e.g. no apparent control surfaces, extreme acceleration, direction change, detection by certain sensors but not others, and UAP effects on equipment, mechanical, electrical controls and weapon systems, and whether persistent or transitory. So the people that kind of have been in the subject a little while, their ears might have perked up there, because they're essentially saying, if there are any of these six observables present, we want to know about them. So the stuff that Arrow should be highlighting, according to the guidance issued by the Joint Chiefs in the US in May, is the stuff that's anomalous. You shouldn't be looking at two lines in a report that says, there are some anomalous things, but we haven't figured them out yet. We're not going to talk about them until we do. And then a 60-odd page report on balloons and prosaic stuff. Really, the only thing they should be looking at is the anomalous stuff. And that's what Arrow should be concerned with. So this kind of caused a bit of a wave in the community when it was released, because, it was these things that they're told to look for were specified in the NDAA in the Schumer Act that we already mentioned earlier. But that act didn't pass, yet they're still being told to look for these things that were specified in that act. So you can see that there's a little bit of, you know, maybe not game playing, but miscommunications going on internally. They're looking for the anomalous stuff. However, when they're talking to the public, they're like, if it's not ET, we, you know, like that's the only thing we're going to kind of look for that's anomalous, and everything else, we're looking at balloons and things like that. So naturally that kind of lit a bit of a fire. The other thing is
on that. So does that not speak to anyone who thinks the Arrow situation is, you know, project, you know, blue book, whatever it is, you know, Mark II, it done its job because all the mainstream media picked up the key headlines of nothing to see here.
Yes.
No one's going after the corrections or whatever else comes after it. The mainstream media is not picking up Dean Johnson's tweets, unfortunately, to say,
yep,
actually, if you look at this side of things, they're saying that the total opposite. That doesn't happen. So it's kind of job done from a mainstream point of view. The folks at Arrow don't give a shit about the UFO community. They're not sitting here going, yeah, but what if those guys dig this up? The folks in charge are going, and I mean really in charge, they're going, that's fine. The damage is done there. We've sorted it. All the rest of it is just chatter and clutter. We are literally that little frequency they were trying to mess about with before that you don't end up picking up the pigeons. You know, they were just wideband. So that's literally what's happened with that. And it done its job. So, that was successful to an extent.
Yeah, absolutely. Just to that, I would say, you know, we got here through pressure and activism, and we can do it again. It's an arm wrestle, but you're totally right. The media ran with that. Nothing to see here, folks. And so this is an uphill battle as it's ever been. And luckily, we have people like Matt Laszlo from Askapol kind of on the ground asking officials directly about the UAP issue as they come out of briefings and meetings and things like that. Recently, he got to catch up with Eric Burleson, who you spoke with, right? But I guess, you know, this is a bit more recent now. There have been some briefings, you know, Lou Elizondo went and he briefed them not too long ago. And so, yeah, Matt asked about these kinds of things. So in a nutshell, Burleson mentioned that the UAP caucus has been given two locations housing alleged non-human intelligence tech. Can't speak about it because he's worried it will be moved, which speaks to something we've discussed many times before. Like, don't tell them that you know where it is because they'll move it somewhere else. So expect them to want to kind of go look there. Apparently, a lot of what Elizondo testified to them confirmed what Grush was saying. Eric said that they weren't able to confirm the non-human intelligence aspect of the story yet, but they have confirmed that there are compartmentalized programs that are being hidden unlawfully from Congress. So that part of it, you know, completely innocuous. That should be enough for the media to grab hold of this. It's not. So, you know, like I say, glad we have people like Matt there. They're still trying to get Grush on as staff so that he can be a little bit more, and there's a quote, straightforward with them, whatever that means. I don't know how much he's allowed to kind of say. They're open to coordinating UAP legislation with Schumer and Rounds and, you know, everyone from across the aisle. Yeah. So hopefully that'll be a little smoother this year instead of a whole bunch of things being offered that kind of end up clashing. There's kind of a little veiled threat at Speaker Mike Johnson. They say if Mike Johnson won't approve a UAP subcommittee, then they'll get someone who will, which suggests that maybe, you know, they'll try and remove him like they did last year. Wasn't necessarily the UAP thing that made the last speaker be removed, but, you know, a lot of noise and pressure against him could cause a few other people with other issues to kind of speak up and want to change the Speaker of the House. And then finally, Eric asked Lou and Grush, he said when he asked why these aliens would travel to Earth from millions of light years just to crash, he was corrected and he was told they don't physically come from outer space, but rather, and again, a quote, phase into our existence.
Yeah.
And that obviously brings up a whole bunch of multidimensional hijinks and things like that. But I just want to kind of throw into it that Secret Machines, the book, you know, the To the Stars book from Tom DeLonge or the A.J. Hartley, and there's a series with Peter Lavenda where, you know, they supposedly mix a bit of truth with fiction and they're telling you things without telling you things, kind of. The book is Secret Machines. The reason the secret on the cover is spelt with a K and not a C is because they're hinting at the term secreted, and they're suggesting that these objects are secreted into our existence. So think of something that would have to be built on our side of the fence because it doesn't function on the other side of the fence. So whatever things these things represent, they might not even be how the home world looks or what they use on the other side of that. I think it's a really provocative provocative phrase that obviously got a lot of people chatting.
Yeah, it definitely did. And Erik Burleson's one of those guys who, fair play to him, he's made a few pretty bold statements. He done it with me, didn't he, when he mentioned the whole angels and demons thing. And I almost ruined his political career by people thinking he was a Nazi, you know, based off of screenshots.
Nazis.
So,
Was just, remind me, it was just like a sports Hall of Fame thing.
It was a sports sweater for the Missouri, I think, Hall of Fame.
And they replied to you?
They replied going, yeah, this is a design overlook on our part back in 2007 or something. So yeah, that was a bit wild. Almost got cancelled overnight for housing Nazis. And then to go and mention that again, you know, where they phase into our existence, I think that's one of those that if and when Lou Elizondo gets back on the podcast circuit, and folks, he will not be on the podcast circuit until that book's out, so anyone advertising such, that's wrong. Same with Grush. That kind of stuff, David Grush, when he gets onto some shows, that needs to be the first thing they're being asked about, you know, expand on that. Erik Burleson saying this, so where are you getting this from? How's this coming about? You know, why is this different? How did we first learn this kind of stuff? You know, how do you go from something crashing at Roswell physically to these things secrete into our existence? You know, something's picking that up. And I don't think that's just something that's seen with the eyeballs. That must be from sensor systems and all the other kind of stuff that we're seeing. So, that's a really interesting nugget. Not something that's new, but to hear a congressman say, I've been told this from these guys, pretty interesting stuff. And I like that. Erik Burleson, I think, is good for the subject. So, and well done to Matt Laszlo.
Yeah, absolutely. I love the way that Matt presents, and he asks the questions. If you listen to the audio of him asking these questions, he asks in a way that just makes it real safe to answer. You know, he asks in hypotheticals. He puts everything there to basically maximize the chance that the Senate is actually going to talk about what he's being asked about. So kudos, you know, that's a skill. You do it as well. I've seen some people do it less well in this community, and drama comes from it and people get upset and things like that, and then we never get an answer. So it's always, you know, good to think about how we're asking these questions. The last thing I wanted to mention
askapaul.com for folks to go and check up and sign up to Matt's stuff. You don't have to pay, you can sign up and just get notifications, or you can subscribe for a couple of schmeckles if you've got that, and that kind of content is what you're looking for. Very much boots on the ground, reactive politicians walking out of briefings, and Matt is hounding them as they walk from room to room about the UFO UAP topic. So and Erik Burleson done that piece, I think it's like an hour and a half, on a layover from Chicago as well, so he was in the middle of traveling, and he gave that interview. So fair play to all of them. So well done.
It's good. He also spoke to Mark Warner. And when he asked Mark Warner about Grush, Mark replied with who, which has made a lot of people kind of say, what? But he spoke to Grush last year, and so on and so forth. Basically, just means, and Matt kind of reiterated this on Twitter, just means that he's saying, like, it's not on my docket right now. There are more important things to do. You know, there are wars going on and stuff like that.
If you listen to the actual audio, because I'm subscribed to Matt, so I listened to the audio of what was said. It is like, who? As in, like, almost, I've not heard you, who? David Grush. And it's like, again, we have said this before, Dan, these people are not sitting all day, every day, thinking about UFOs and should I go and speak to David Grush? Should I go and get a briefing from Lou Elizondo? It's literally the 15 minutes in their calendar that get filled in 2 hours ago from their PA to tell them you've now got this in here. They choose to do it, or a staffer goes. So this doesn't consume their lives in the way it does many other folks. So yeah, I don't take that as any slight when Mark Warner goes, who? That's just a what? Who are you talking about? Oh, David Grush. And among a million other names these people have got to think about and deal with and talk about, it's just something else on their plate, isn't it?
Absolutely. And just to pull something from earlier in as well, the white papers that the Salk Foundation are making, they're the kinds of things that an aide will read. And then in that 15-minute gap the senator has where they're like, all right, talk to me about UAP. That's the kind of thing they're talking about. So look at, you know, that language and how it's being spoken about there.
Yeah.
I think it's really important. We are still getting drone incursions as well. These have been going on for a while. You know, we had drones over the Omaha ships. And I say drones real loosely, because in some of these instances, you know, there's anomalous behavior that people were seeing these things hovering over the flight deck and describing them as like pyramid shaped and stuff. That was for the Omaha. But in this one, there has been just a lot of drone incursions at Langley AFB. The main Navy shipyard is there. So obviously that's a real great place to gather intelligence if you want to know how their ships work and so on and so forth. The activity, you know, just kind of went on and on. The guy who kind of came in to take over, he's U.S. Air Force General Gregory Gillett. He's currently head of the U.S. North Command, NORTHCOM, and the U.S. Canadian North American Defense Command. He, when he started the job, he was meant to prepare like a 90-day assessment of like, how are things going? What projects can we change? How can we cut some corners? You know, how can we make things cheaper, get some efficiencies there? Let us know what you think, and this will be, you know, what you do for the year. He said that he began his 90-day assessment, but that the counter UAS, and that's an uncrewed aerial system, which is, that describes a drone or something else, you know, it's another term for UFO if you look through the files. He said that it's just been so overwhelming that he wasn't prepared for the number of incursions that are happening, and it's just taken up all of his time. So this stuff is ongoing. It's really stressful for people. And during this kind of series of articles and events and talking that happened, Jay Stratton of the UAPTF came out, and he said that he sent his people, I guess a team from the UAPTF, to the Omaha within a day of that stuff being reported, the incursions mm-hmm. around the Omaha being reported. And he denies that they were normal and doubles down on the pyramid craft. But, you know, no matter who's kind of reporting you're looking at, everyone agrees that they are devices of unknown origin. There's that phrase again. They're mysterious. They don't know where they come from. So even if they're prosaic, normal drones that we could build, we still don't know who's sending them. There is a bad actor out there, and they don't know who is doing it. Not China, not Russia. You know, someone's doing it. So this stuff remains important. And once again, like we said earlier, you know, lacing the oceans with sensors will help us figure out USOs. It will also teach us a hell of a lot of science along the way and close gaps in domain awareness. It's kind of the same thing we need to do here, you know, whether we're talking about UFOs or protecting air bases from DJI drones that someone is using to drop bombs on a place. The solution is the same. Close the gaps, put the sensors up, pay attention to what's in the sky and the ocean and space, and let's just figure it out.
Some things, though, Dan, can't be figured out, can they? Such as the three-body problem, as we're going to very quickly have a non-spoiler discussion, because this is a big show that has launched on Netflix, huge budget, huge I think it was at $20 million per episode. I think it was something like that. It might have been more. But if you want to check Dan while I talk, huge budget, Game of Thrones producers, massive marketing campaign, massive advertising campaign, on my home satellite system, Sky TV. As soon as you log on, it's got like that interactive menu. Three body problem is the first thing that comes up. So it's been heavily, heavily pushed across all kind of platforms. Based on the three body problem, Dan, correct me on this. The series is called The Three Body Problem. Is that right? The three books or no? That's the first
book. So that's the first book. The series is called The Remembrance of Earth's Past Trilogy. No one calls it that. No one, even fans of the book. It's just the Three Body Problem trilogy, you know?
Yeah. So the first book's The Three Body Problem. I started reading it, a bit hard with the translation, got bogged down, stepped away from it. Dan, you'd recommended that, you said the Chinese show was there. I started, watched it, and I've plowed through it in the last kind of month or so. I've got 5 episodes left. Now, the Chinese version is subtitled and it's free on YouTube. It's 30 episodes, 30 episodes. The Netflix one is 8 episodes in full. So I've got a few episodes left of the Chinese one. Then I'm going to go on to watch the Netflix one. However, I've read a lot of non-spoiler reviews. Pretty mixed reception to it, to be honest. I've got friends who have watched it who have been pretty positive about it, which has been cool to see. But from what I understand, Dan, no spoilers, but the Netflix show is very much taking inspiration from the book, but the characters are pretty different. The names are different. The setting's different. And is the story different?
The story is in some ways different. With all adaptations, you know, you've got to change it from going from a book to a screen or a screen to a book, or, you know, even if you pick up a novelization of a movie, it's different to what you saw, right? And it's always really interesting seeing them adapt for these different mediums. We'll have a full spoiler conversation on it. But yeah, eight episodes, moves at a fair clip. And people that have read the book or have even watched the series, the Tencent Chinese series, will notice that there are some changes to the story that they take liberties with. Some work, some work less well. But that is for me as a book reader. You know, they might work for you. So I'm really excited to see and hear what you think when you've watched it, and we'll dive into it.
Yeah, definitely recommend that if you can read subtitles and you've got time to invest, it is 30, 45 minute episodes on YouTube. I've really enjoyed it, and I'm someone who can fall away from these things really quickly. The idea is interesting. It's quite a slow build, but I think it's slow build enough with enough happening to keep you wanting to see more. Definitely could have cut it down a little bit. Dan, we've spoke about that, and we'll get to that when we talk about the thing properly. But yeah, definitely recommend it. And if anyone's wondering why I've not talked about it much or even not shared much online, I'm trying to stay away from it because I can already see some of the promotion for it spoiling
literally as we were talking to start this episode. Andy got spoiled by something that is ridiculous that they put it in marketing, but there you go, that's the age we live in, right?
But I if you've never seen anything about it, it won't mean anything to you. But given I'm 24 episodes into the Chinese version, I'm guessing just putting two and two together and getting whatever the Chinese number four is, insert joke here, I can discern something from that.
Oh, no, the Japanese. No, I don't know.
Yeah, you made a total ass of yourself there. Well done, Dan.
Well, we're an idiot.
But with that, should we say domo arigato?
Domo arigato.
Does that mean goodbye or hello?
I don't know.
Or any of those? We don't have time to check it. We've ruined it, Dan. Yeah, anyway, folks, we're heading off now east of Mombasa, and I'm going to let Dan know exactly what that means. So thank you very much for listening, and speak very soon. That is all for this episode. Thank you very much for tuning in. Don't forget to leave the podcast a review on your chosen platform. Apple and Spotify do make a huge difference to the algorithm. If you're checking the show on YouTube, please don't forget to like and leave a comment on here as well. Any sharing you do is very much appreciated on any social media platform. And finally, you can listen to shows ad-free and sponsor-free in their glorious full versions by subscribing for less than the price of a coffee on Apple, Spotify, just search That UFO Podcast Premium, YouTube, you can sign up and be a member, or you can do that through patreon.com. Thank you very much for listening, folks. It wasn't a tic-tac and not-